This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Ashley Thornburg. Wayne Sandstead had a long career in public service in North Dakota, from the State House to Lieutenant Governor. He thought about studying business or maybe law. But as we learn in this StoryCorps oral history excerpt with his son John, that changed early in his education.
Once I got into debate and speech work in high school and college, the direction was clearly into public life. I was participating in student congresses and debate and speech, actually a state championship speaker. So I graduated 53 at Minot High, 57 at St. Olaf. I went on to Northwestern and then later earned a doctor's degree from the University of North Dakota. And the story behind that was I was serving as lieutenant governor for 8 years with Governor Art Link, one of North Dakota's great governors. And one day when Art and I were together, he said, "You know, Wayne, St. Olaf and Northwestern are really prestigious. But if I were you, I'd get a North Dakota degree as soon as you can." Fortunately, I had the GI Bill coming, and I used that to go to UND. I was the only lieutenant governor in the nation living in student housing, which caused a lot of attention. I was interviewed by several Eastern newspapers. How can this be? The lieutenant governor pay, by the way, at that time in North Dakota, was $2,000 a year. I could get food stamps if I'd applied.
And your first elected office was the Constitutional Convention?
No, I was actually 1965. That was the Johnson landslide when Johnson defeated Goldwater. And then it paid to be a Democrat because Johnson carried everywhere. So I was elected to the State House as a young teacher legislator. Served in the House for 8 years and the Senate for 2 years. And then I went on to become the lieutenant governor with Art Link for 8 years. 16 total elections when you add them up. 15 wins, I hasten to add. The loss surprised everybody, including most especially Art Link and I. Little thought that we could be defeated in a third-term election. But it was 1980, and that was a Reagan landslide in the nation, and Art and I were prominent Democrats. Went back to the State House for another term and then went on to State Superintendent of Public Instruction. And I served there for 7 4-year terms, 28 years, so I was the ranking chief state school officer in the United States. I also had 18 years of teaching time at Minot High. The teachers in the state, I think, had high regard for the fact that I was not only as a state superintendent telling them how to do it, I could do it, and they knew it.
Tell me about your time as lieutenant governor.
At that time, strictly a part-time office, as I indicated. The real role was president of the Senate. I tried to make it more of an ombudsman office to do inquiries on behalf of citizens about government agencies, and that helped a lot in terms of name recognition, and I suspect my success at the ballot after that came from that work in ombudsmanship and representing people to their government as a lieutenant governor. In fact, my dad always said one time, "Did you win that election?" I said, "Yes." He said, "Do you know why you won?" I said, "Yeah, I was out there working at it hard, meeting the public." He said, "No, you don't remember it, but Bill Langer, North Dakota's most renowned politician, came by and tickled your toes in the bassinet in the back of my store. That's why you won the election."
Throughout your years in public office, how has running for election and holding public office changed?
Oh, there's been a great change, and sad to say, I think it's not been for the better. Clearly, in my early days, I think there was great rapport between the elected officials, no matter what the party designation. Kind of times we're in now where the attack mode seems to be the way you deal with your opponents instead of the civility that ought to be a part of public life. I was in every community at graduation time or Memorial Day or the 4th of July or parades galore or giving public address speeches. Citizens knew who you were and had a feeling for you, so I didn't have to spend a lot of money campaigning. It was a presence in their community at times that counted for the citizenry that I think led to the successful election record.
I can say I think I've eaten at every small church in North Dakota going on the campaign trail when I was younger. So
we traveled a lot, and it was every weekend, you know. When I retired, one of the reporters came up and said, "What do you have on the bucket list?" I said, well, this is going to surprise you. I want to get a cat. He said, a cat? I said, yeah. I said, you need to know I was on the road all the time. I could never take care of a pet. Our granddaughter read that comment in the paper and ran over to the pond and picked up Harry and brought him to us. Tuxedo cat, black and white. They look like they have a tuxedo on. Harry's there every morning trying to read the paper. He's in my lap. He doesn't want me paying attention to the paper.
Did you ever get to meet any presidents?
Yeah, I take great pride in that. I actually was in the White House with President Nixon. Later, I had the privilege of riding in Air Force One. I rode with President Jimmy Carter, met President Clinton down in Florida, and I have a photo of him and I shaking hands and talking about North Dakota. He was very gracious. I did have a photo taken in Grand Forks, North Dakota, of President Obama and my wife, Mary Jane. And then my most famous photo from Harry S. Truman. Truman was my favorite president. When I was at St. Olaf, I became a Minnesota Citizenship Clearinghouse student. That meant you could go out and participate in the campaign. So in 52 and 56, I was a Stevenson volunteer for Adlai Stevenson. We had a fundraiser in St. Paul. Stevenson was coming to speak and couldn't make it. They sent Harry Truman in. When we got there, they said, look, you folks that have been out on the campaign trail, you get to stand in line down here in this ante room, and you'll be able to go by and shake hands with Truman. I said, wow. I grabbed a piece of paper, wrote on there, Mr. President, always admired you. Stevenson volunteer, Wayne Sandstead, 1111 St. Olaf Avenue, Northfield, Minnesota. Would you please send autographed photograph? And as I'm walking up, I stick that in his coat pocket. You wouldn't do that today. You'd lose an arm, I think. Well, I didn't hear it till the next February. I opened the door, and the mailman's big-eyed as he's standing there. It's a franked envelope with Harry S. Truman on it. And I opened it up, and here's this beautiful official photograph of Harry Truman. It had lithographed over in the side his name. But he had taken a fountain pen and wrote, kindest regards to Wayne G. Sandstead, Independence, Harry S. Truman. The real signature is distinctly different from the one done by the lithograph. It's my proudest possession.
How would you like the people of North Dakota to remember you as a state official?
Well, I think as one who gave his all to his public time and to the fact that we made a difference in the lives of students for many, many years on end.
Years from now, when your great-grandchildren or great-great-grandchildren listen to this, what piece of wisdom would you like to share with them that would help them to succeed in life?
Yes, I'd like them to be involved in public life. I think no matter what the position, whether it's on city councils or park boards or school boards, they ought to try to participate in community decision-making. And in that way, they support quality of every type of involvement by citizens. And from that perspective, I believe that we all have that responsibility, and I'd like to see them accept it. Our democracy could well be in jeopardy when citizens can't participate in or refuse to participate in the elective process and don't serve their state and nation or their local community in leadership roles.
What are your hopes for the future?
Well, I just hope that it's possible for our democracy to continue to be representative of all sides, and that debate will be recognized as the honorable thing to do, and that the opportunity to move society in positive directions with a clear intent that it should represent all citizens, not just those with great wealth and influence.
That was former North Dakota Lieutenant Governor Wayne Sandstead. He and his son John visited the StoryCorps mobile recording booth in July 2018 while it spent a month in Bismarck. Dakota Datebook is next.
When you hear arts programming here on Prairie Public, Know that it is supported in part by the North Dakota Council on the Arts, and we thank them.
This is Dakota Datebook for January 22nd, Remembering Theodore Roosevelt, introduced by his favorite tune, A Hot Time in the Old Town Tonight, featuring the words of the cowboy president as read by Steve Stark. Since his days as a small boy, Theodore Roosevelt was captivated by the natural world, especially by animals. He devoured books, an enthrallment that enhanced his entire life. His later sojourns and retreats to Western Dakota Territory, while reveling in cowboy escapades and cattle operations, also provided feet on the ground and eyes to the sky opportunities with nature. He observed firsthand the irresponsible land use and the disregard for nature that was common practice at the time. He found it alarming, but educational. His resolve to further pursue a passion for progressive conservation was honed in the Badlands and Plains of Dakota. In Outlook magazine for this week in 1913, he expressed his thoughts.
The civilized people of today look back with horror at their medieval ancestors, who wantonly destroyed great works of art, or sat by slothfully while they were destroyed. We have passed that age, but we are, as a whole, still in that low state of civilization where we do not understand that it is also vandalism wantonly to destroy or to commit the destruction of what is beautiful in nature, whether it be a cliff, a forest, or a species of mammal or bird. Here in the United States, we turn our rivers and streams into sewers and dumping grounds. We pollute the air, we destroy forests, and exterminate fishes, birds, and mammals, not to speak of vulgarizing charming landscapes with hideous advertisements. But at last it looks as if our people are awakening. Above all, we should realize that the effort toward this end is essentially a democratic movement. Now, there is a considerable body of opinion in favor of our keeping for our children's children, as a priceless heritage, all the delicate beauty and all the burly majesty of the mightier forms of wild life. Surely, our people do not understand, even yet, the rich heritage that is theirs.
Today's Dakota Datebook was written and performed by Steve Stark. I'm Merrill Pepcorn.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the Historical Society of North Dakota. This series with funding from the Theodore Roosevelt Medora Foundation.
Support for PrairiePublic is provided by financial associate Kyle Deberton with Thrivent Financial in Bismarck, helping members be wise with money and live generously. Details and information on how to reach Kyle can be found online at thrivent.com.
Critics of Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez say she has a lot to learn about governing, but one historian says she's already learned a lot from past politicians.
When it comes to communication, I think it's very similar to a Roosevelt. It's very similar to a Reagan. It's very similar to a Winston Churchill.
Placing the popularity of a freshman congresswoman into historical context on the next morning edition.
Starting at 4 a.m. Central, right here on Prairie Public.
That's it for this Monday edition of Main Street. Coming up tomorrow on the show, believe it or not, rabbits play an important role in our food system, and that's regardless of whether you eat rabbits or not. We learn more from Allison Brennan of Red River Rabbitry, who will be presenting at an upcoming food and farming conference. That's tomorrow on Main Street. Until then, enjoy the rest of your day.